www.tampa-tampa.org.
And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, WMNF 88.5. Thank you so much for listening. We've got a great show. This show is called Art in Your Ear. My name is Joel Chilke. I am the hostess who loves you the most. We're going to be talking about a Mexican building a wall at USF, and then you get to come take it apart. Also later, a black leader is a target of racism. Yes, Othello at Shakespeare, by Shakespeare at Jobsite Theater. I hope you'll stay tuned. Let's get started with some music. Here's some Puss in Boots. We're leaving London.
There's a dark and rolling sea between my love and me. As I walk through this cold and lonesome town, as I wish for a better day, I need a place to stay. If it's just a board to spread my blanket down, off and on I change my shirt just to wash away the dirt. It's over to American Express. Not a letter do I find. She didn't even send a line, though I know she has my forwarding address. If I could beg, steal, or borrow a ticket on some old ship or plane, sang a song that she loved so well, that it wouldn't take too long to make up another song of a lonesome and sad farewell. If I could beg, steal, or borrow a ticket on some old ship or
And that is Puss in Boots, Leaving London. I want to let you know we've got a couple other things. If you have purchased tickets to Lucinda Williams, you can pick up and drive by Checkers. You can pick up those tickets here at WMNF if you don't want to wait in the will call line for that show. Call Miss Julie at 813-238-8001 and let her know you'd be interested in coming get your tickets, and she'll get those ready for you. I think pickup times right now are from 10 to 5 on weekdays. Also, if you have a car you no longer need, do you guys have cars you don't need anymore? Think about using it to support WMNF. You can donating your car, truck, or other vehicle is a great way to support the causes you care most about, like your station. Visit WMNF.org or call 1-888-966-3885.
Te conheço como a palma da minha língua, como a face dos meus dentes, igual quando você rasga minha pele, mas não sente, mas não sente.
Amor.
Ai, amor.
Aqui estou.
Devo deixar-te.
Te digo a tu secretária.
Could you be now? I think I'll be lonely.
Te he dejado sola mucho tiempo.
Raindrops.
Te has sentido sola, lo entiendes.
She's gone.
Acá estoy.
Just before the sunset.
With Mexican Institute of Sound in the background. I just want to say that one of the reasons why I'm playing this song is because one of our new shows, Latinx, on our HD channel, Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and again at 7 p.m., is a show focusing on new and alternative Latin music, and it's awesome. At first, I listened because I just wanted to make sure everything was okay, but now I just listen because I'm addicted to it. So tune in. You can use your WMNF app or go online to WMNF.org. And the Listen tab, go to New Sounds. Or, of course, you're welcome to use HD Radio. So right now, I'd like to welcome to the studio. Welcome back to the studio. And welcome to the studio. On the phone, we've got artist Bosco Sodi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hey, hello. How are you?
Oh, fine. Thank you so much for calling in. You're calling in from New York?
Yes, from New York now. Yeah.
Excellent. Warm weather ahead for you. Warm weather ahoy. Also in the studio, it's a pleasure to welcome back Sarah Howard and Mark Fredericks. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Nice to see you. Sarah, your title is a mouthful. So it's you're the USF Curator of Public Art and Social Practice.
I am.
And Mark, I have you down as just the brains.
That works for me.
Graphic
studio. I'll get some cards printed up on it.
Okay, yeah. I used to have Goddess on my cards when I owned the Globe. And then Bosco Sodi is a Mexican artist that splits his time between Mexico, New York, and I think, was it Barcelona?
Yes.
Oh, I'm jealous of your life. So there is a wall being built next Thursday at USF by the Contemporary Art Museum?
Yes, right out front.
So what can all three of you, please everybody jump in. How is this happening and how come, why is it happening?
Well, it really came to be, we have a new curator at large, Christian Viveros Funay, at USF Contemporary Art Museum, and he's put together this just magnificent show titled The Visible Turn, Contemporary Artists Confront Political Invisibility. And as part of the show, he included Bosco Sodi's Muro Project, which is Spanish for wall. And so as part of that exhibition, we have one of the bricks in the exhibition, as well as documentation from a previous public art presentation. Bosco Sodi has done this project in 2017 in Washington Square Park in New York City, and then in 2018 at the National Theatre in London. And so we are just absolutely delighted to be able to bring this to Tampa and to our community and host it in front of the Contemporary Art Museum, especially at this critical time.
One of the things that is, I've been thinking a lot, and I really super appreciate USF CAM, the Contemporary Art Museum, for as long as I've been aware of the museum, for years and years and years, is having that very social, societal, political awareness. One of my favorite shows was a show on Iran not that long ago, and a couple of years ago, but it had brought all these artists from Iran in, and you know, stuff like that. What and Bosco, I hope you can talk about this a little bit. What is the role, or what is the purpose, or how does an artist's view of what's going on in the world and their way of expressing it, how does that navigate through the world that we know?
Well, I mean, I think on the times we are living now, it's an obligation for an artist when he finds a way to express his political point of view to do it, no? I mean, these are not normal times, and I think artists have to become much more awareness and much more proactive with what is happening, no, in these times.
Do you think...
So, I mean, I'm not a political artist, no, but I when I came with the idea of doing Muro, I feel that it was an obligation to make it. No, and what I like about Muro is that it doesn't talk just about the famous wall of Trump that obviously is very important and to touch that subject, but also it talks about all the other walls, no, the racial walls, the gender walls, and how. With this kind of I call it more a social exercise. No, it's a social exercise to remind people that any wall is ephemeral. That when people get together, society gets together, they can dissemble any wall, and also that even though Trump goes ahead with his wall, walls are ephemeral and walls are dismantlable anytime the society wants. No, so I think it was important on these times to remind people about all these things.
Yeah, and I think we should make clear to the viewers that the public is invited to come. We'll be assembling this wall from 1,080 bricks that have been shipped here. They were handcrafted by Mexican craftsmen in Oaxaca, Mexico, and shipped to Tampa. They will be assembled that morning, and we're inviting the public to collectively disassemble the wall. So participants are invited to come take a brick. They will be distributed with a carrying bag. They're rather large. They're about 20 inches long, so, you know, greater than our traditional bricks that we're used to, and they come with a certificate of authenticity. Each brick has been sealed with Bosco's signature. And so one of the other things about this work is that one of Bosco's concepts behind it is that it's like collectively owned. So you're co-owning this with your other participants in the community, which I think is a really beautiful statement.
Dear listeners, you are listening to, that was just Sarah Howard. We've got Bosco Sodi on the phone, artist Bosco Sodi, and Mark Frederick's here talking about a wall and also sort of art, public art, societal art, political art, or just politics.
I think it's the three things. No, I think it's a public art, it's a performance, and it's a political piece.
Right, I love that. One of the things that when I was walking my dog this morning, years and years ago, I live in an area that has all brick streets, and years ago, at night or when it rains, you can see the fingerprints of the people who made the bricks on each brick. And that's always sort of struck me, and also how a lot of the walls that are all around our country are built by people who are usually poorer than, you know, the poorest part of the country, and probably everywhere. A lot of times there are people who have been oppressed by other people, and this is how they're getting through. And so the idea that these hands are made to build walls that are sort of meant to keep them out is kind of insane. But I love the fact that you're saying, yeah, but those same people can also be the people that dismantle the wall.
Exactly. And for me, it was very interesting because when I was doing before we did the Washington Square Park project, I realized that all the craftsmen that they were helping me to make these bricks for, it was for another project that I had in my foundation, they were telling me, all of them, they were, on a part of their life, they were illegal immigrants, and all the young ones, they wanted to come to the United States. So that's when I realized that I say, listen, these guys are the guys that are going to build the wall, you know?
Great.
I mean, as Mr. Trump wants, we're going to do a wall made by Mexicans with the four elements of Mexico.
Right.
And bring it all the whole way to Washington Square Park or in this time to Tampa. But I mean, it's also very, I'll say in English,
I'll say it in Spanish first.
It's muy extraño. It's very strange, no?
Yeah.
So, the concept that the wall is, it came by trucks all the way from Mexico City, following the same route that some illegal immigrants will follow when they take a truck from South America or from Oaxaca or from everywhere. They arrive to Tampa. We're going to assemble them all together with students and people that it's want to help on that. And then to disassemble and to make a celebration of it. I think when you dismantle a wall, it should be a celebration.
You know, were there any reactions when you were building the wall in Washington Square or at the National Theater in London? Were there any reactions of people that sort of threw you off or surprised you? Or how was it the first couple of times that you did this?
Well, the first one was beautiful because at the beginning my plan was to do it just Mexican people that live in New York to build it. Not to dismantle it, but to build it, just people that contributes a lot to unite, to the society, like architects, artists, singers, opera singers, and also people that works in supermarkets, to show that, there is this very valuable people, no, that lives here. But then when we were building it, group of kids, young kids, 8 years old, the teacher found out about it in the New York Times, so she took them to see how we were building it. And the children that were drawing the wall and watching, but then one of the children told me, "Can I help to build it?" So at the end, all the kids were building it. It became people that was passing by was helping to build. This kind of very organic also happening, no? And then at the end, I was very surprised because nobody at all, at least in New York or in London, came against the concept. You know what I mean?
It would be kind of crazy, to be against the concept, but I know that there's those people out there.
Came from, far-right people to come and say, listen, to go with your wall and or be on respect to, and it was very, very easy and everybody was happy to do it. Maybe some people was not, didn't agree with the concept, but they were there, respectfully,
What, in the context of your other work, and I'm speaking with Bosco Sodi right now, in the context of your other work, your work is very tactile. It has this very physical presence, even the more two-dimensional stuff. But how, when you have this type of work, do you feel like it's leading you somewhere that was not part of your original sort of intention for it?
Sometimes yes. The thing is that the whole process of the wall is very organic and it never runs the same way. It was completely different. The approach that the people had in London was completely different than in New York,
I'm thinking because London right now is dealing, these are world problems that are international. There was a New York Times story about, and I don't remember her name, the actress in Roma, and how she's talking about in Mexico, indigenous people and especially indigenous women are just sort of dismissed.
Yes.
In of course, in England, they're dealing with Brexit right now, and a big part of that was fear of immigrants, just stoked by various things, and we all know what's going on here in the U.S. So there's this sort of international discussion that isn't happening quite at the level it could be. I'm speaking to your listeners with artist Bosco Sodi on the phone. We've got Sarah Howard from USF and Mark Fredericks, also from USF Graphics Studio, to talk about the event that's happening next Thursday at USF Tampa. It's at the Contemporary Art Museum.
Right.
So how does this then also fit in with the larger institutions of a university and also of a museum? Graphic Studio, of course, is the internationally known
Atelier.
Yeah. Thank you. I can never say that word properly. So what is happening with Bosco Sodi's work, and how does that fit in with the bigger picture?
Well, I think, we're at these really critical times where we're dealing and grappling with some major, changes and movements and, the way we're approaching the world and trying to unite and find solutions to some of these, issues that are going to pave the path forward in a progressive and beneficial, mutually beneficial way. And I think art really has an artist and institutions have a responsibility, have a power to tap into people's imaginations, to their sort of elicit emotive responses in a way that often we can't do through typical verbal communication. So we're able to present something like this that people understand in kind of a
innate way that allows them to maybe look at things from a different perspective, or to open their eyes and their minds and their hearts to make space for different, you know, points of view, and to look and learn and evolve.
Does it feel, though, that you might be preaching to the people who already are in agreement to come to this, or is there a way to sort of give it an impact beyond the usual audience that would come to the museum or be at the university?
Yeah, we've tried to do a lot of external promotion with this project and to get out into new communities. And a lot of our projects, I mean, we're a free institution. We are constantly trying to build and unite communities and to build new audiences through the arts. And so we've got some groups, you know, school groups coming in. Blake High School is one of our great partners, so their students will be up on campus that day. The Hispanic Outreach Center in Clearwater also will be sending students from their organization, and their families are coming over for the project. So whenever we have sort of a new project that we feel like might be of interest to communities that we're not connecting with, or we don't feel like maybe we're connecting with, we try to make an extra effort to establish those connections.
That's wonderful. So Bosco Sodi, then what happens when you come to Tampa, build a wall, the wall is dismantled by the community? Is there a documentation process that you do, or are you like, okay, bye now, going back to Brooklyn, bye-bye? What's the...
No, normally we try to document as much as possible from the happening, no?
Right.
And I mean, as I said before, it's very important that as many people as possible goes, as mixed as possible, because otherwise it will be just a public art. And the important thing is to make it a happening, and to make it an event, and to make it a success. That's the most important point of the wall. But obviously it's important to document it, and then, I mean, people can remember it with the images and Instagram and... As much as possible, that we can make this spark to people. No, spark, you say chispa.
Spark,
no?
Is correct. Yep.
Spark. See. People to begin to plant the seed for them to think much more about these kind of problems. No, of immigration and gender and economics. No.
And then, the idea that, I mean, I just going back to, I love the idea that at your, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of your foundation. It's Casa
Wabi.
Casa Wabi. Yes. I know, that's what I was reading, because I was like, oh, Wabi Sabi. But that every single thing is handmade. It's all hand built.
All handmade, yes.
An artisan did all this, and I don't know how many people it's going to take to build the wall and, you know, of course, dismantle it. But that idea of labor and physical touch, and that it has to be done as a group, that it's not an individual project, I think is something I just want to focus on for a minute. Is working, you know, do you find yourself as someone who works more generally in solitude, and then this is different, or is this sort of the project that you try to seek out a collaborative or a group work?
No, normally in my studio, I work by myself. You know, I don't even let assistants to help me with the paintings or with the sculptures. So for me, it's a completely different approach to my work, no? But it's also very interesting, because I think you lose even much more control than in the paintings and everything. You don't know how it's going to happen, who is going to help, you know, like it's much more unpredictable, and makes each performance of these ones unique, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I should point out that the performance will be documented, so we'll have a video running the whole time, and that'll be put into like a hyperlapse. Mm-hmm. Right now in the exhibition, we have one of those videos from the Washington Square Park performance. And so once we've documented our performance, that video will then be replacing the Washington Square Park performance. So if you come and participate in the project, you will actually become part of the art.
Oh, that's awesome. So well, we're starting to get a little bit close to out of time. So I just want to ask a couple more questions about what's coming up for everybody. Bosco Sodi, are you doing this wall again somewhere else, or do you go back to your studio all by yourself and do your
Actually,
work?
I fly from Tampa to London to open my show in London. Mm-hmm. Then I fly from London to Mexico City to open my show in Mexico City. Two shows. Well, then, I mean, I'm always open, like, when there is an interesting project like this to make it happen again. I mean, and it couldn't be better moment. No, I think I have been very lucky on that, because when I did the wall here in Washington Square Park, of course, was the in a very interesting political time. When I did it in London, just by chance, next week Trump visited, so, and it was the day of the gay parade. Mm-hmm. So, and I think now, I mean, the wall comes and catches again, no?
Right. Well, it also means that it's just so, and that's what, to me, what artists do, is that they perceive something in a way and then manifest it in a way that then the rest of society kind of catches up with them.
I think
after
so,
that. So, oh, so you're going to be all over the place. I hope you get lots of melatonin to take your sleeping and and you know, some nice champagne or something with that. Graphic Studio, USF Cam. I know you guys have a million things going on. Anything coming up there?
Yeah, we have a few events coming up at Cam as part of the exhibition as a whole. We have a curator's tour with Christian Viveros Fane. That's coming up on February 6th in the evening. And then we'll have an event with one of the other artists in the exhibition, Carolina Sobeca. That will be a cloud tasting event.
Nice, nice.
And appropriately enough, it'll be happening on Valentine's Day.
Aww.
Yeah. So that's February 14th up at CAM.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And do you have anything you want to make sure people know about, Sarah?
At Tempest Projects, we've got an exhibition by Wendy Babcock called Anthem. And also in the project space, we have Misty Crystals, which is a three-person installation with Ben Galladay, John Bird, and Roxanne Jackson. And also, Wendy Babcock and her Noisy Women Drum Group will be doing a performance on February 1st.
That's great. I want to let you know, dear listener, that links to almost everything are up now on the Art in Your Ear page, as well as some photos. And thank you, Bosco, for approving them. Photos from the Washington Square thing. And you can go to Art in Your Ear on WMNF.org or like us on Facebook. All of this stuff is there, and every link I can think of will be there. Thank
you. Can I just say a quick thing in Spanish?
Yes.
Bueno, invitar a todos los latinos en Tampa que vengan a apoyarnos para demostrar que cualquier muro que se ponga se va a desmantelar y que los muros son efímeros. Están invitados todos los latinos en Tampa.
Gracias. Bueno, bueno. Thank you so much. Muchas gracias. I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time. I know you're slammed. So thank you all. Thanks to everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bosco.
Thank you. And we're going to listen just to a little Lord Cannon right now and be back with Othello. I just did something bad to the microphone. So I'm gonna think it. I'm gonna fix it. Well, thank you for listening to. Whoa! Hey now. Hey now. Thank you for listening to Art in Your Ear on WMNF. We are your community radio station, 88.5. We just listened to an interview with USF Cam. Right now, we've got Job Site Theater in the house. Hello, Job Site Theater.
Good afternoon.
Hello. Othello. Job Site does Shakespeare every single year. And I have to tell you, I'm always just kind of fangirling about the Shakespeare. I don't, and this is not a dig on Job Site. It's how theater is. I don't expect to think that every decision that someone makes with Shakespeare is going to be one that I'm like, oh my God, that's perfect, brilliant. But whenever Job Site does Shakespeare, I'm so interested in what is going to happen because it's always, it always reawakens the play for me. Like all of a sudden, there's things in it that I did not ever think about before. And I'm wondering if you all have that experience, if there's stuff about the characters you play, Desdemona, Iago, Othello, if there's something in the play that has sort of come forward for you that you were like, oh, I never really thought about that before.
I know for me, Robert playing Othello, I knew that this was a role that I've always wanted to attack, but I didn't expect to attack it at this age. And so giving the opportunity to play it, like I was very happy about it. But then after seeing some of the issues with the play, and I began to question the characters and the playwright. Should I say, and rather it was a racial issue brought about through the play, through how he has all these stereotypes of the Moor, all these stereotypes that he's calling, and the Moor does not get to, the audience doesn't really get to read into the psychology of the Moor, being that he does not have any asides to them, such as Iago talks to them all the time. So it's kind of hard, in that aspect as a character, knowing that this is about you, but you don't get to portray that and you don't get to tell the audience what's really going on inside of you. So it just has to come out through the message and the story that I deliver on stage. So
as an actor, like what are some of the, how do you make those choices? Because I mean, the play always seemed to me to be very clearly pretty racist and examination of racism while also being pretty racist at the same time. So as an actor, what are you doing? How do you show that Othello is not a one-note, just flat, two-dimensional guy?
Well, right off the bat, you have to come out showing the honor and the love that he has for Desdemona, and it has to be so strong that the audience has to fall in love with this character, because otherwise, once it gets to the middle, they're not going to really like this guy so much. So it has to have that balance. So that's the very, what's the word I'm looking for? That's a hard part, to make sure that the audience falls in love with you at first and then for them to see how they feel afterwards.
Right. Yeah, I think I would argue that it's difficult from my particular perspective to make this argument, but I feel that the play is not necessarily racist, although it is a play about racism, so that the characters in the play may well be racist. However, the one truly clean, noble character in the play, Desdemona, not to say she's flawless, but she is definitely virtuous. That character falls in love and sees the central love story is, between this racially mixed couple. I'm not sure if Shakespeare was writing a racist play from a racist perspective. I don't think he would make that the one virtuous element within the play. I do think he's making a comment on racism and the fact that it's an issue that we've been dealing with. We're just such a tribal species, whether it be nationalism, whether it be racism, it's us against them. And I would argue that Iago is not necessarily a racist individual. He just sees those problems in humanity, and he's such a manipulator that anything that he can use as a tool to drive a schism between people, he's going to use it.
And so it's not necessarily that the more because of his race didn't treat Iago with the honor or respect or promotions that he thought he should get, but just this guy did it, and I'm going to use every single tool in my whatever tool belt. That's mm-hmm. way too many metaphors. I'm sorry, but you know, but that I'm going for it, and I don't care what it takes.
Well, I think that, you know, the underpinnings of what's going on in this world of the play, it's about the way that these societal structures, I think, work on the individual characters and the people that, you know, this is just a part of their world. They live in a patriarchal world where men have power, women do not. They live in a white-centered world where, I mean, Othello is our only person of color, and Shakespeare is very, very specific about that fact in writing the play. So I think we see the ways in which I think these oppressive structures work on the people and the people of color and the women who are murdered and die in this play. And, you know, Iago being a person, a white person who feels he has been wronged and power has been usurped from him. And you know, I think it's purposeful that he doesn't die at the end. He survives and we don't.
That's okay. It's not really a spoiler.
No, well, I think most people walking into this know, but it's funny, you know, I've been, you know, inviting people to the show and many people don't know the play and don't know the ending. And I've been, you know, careful about trying to prepare people for what they're walking into.
And I want to mention, though, that the three roles that you all are in are three pretty juicy roles in Shakespeare canon, but also in acting. And it seems that, and again, like we were saying, sort of Othello doesn't have a relationship with the audience as much as Iago does. But also, here's three roles that that you can go to town on. Mm. You know, you're playing contemporary. Is this set
indeed
contemporary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the play is originally, I think, set in Venice. It's Venice and Turkey, or the Turkish Empire. Is that still
yes.
for this? Okay, I wasn't sure if Afghanistan was going to be. I was looking at the uniforms. Uh-huh. And I just want to mention, listeners, we are speaking with the leads in the cast of Othello. That's up at Job Site right now. It's extended now to February 9th, I believe.
Yes.
That's correct. Working without notes. And but I grabbed one of the videos that Job Site has for it, and it's on the Art in Your Ear page on WMNF.org, or you can just go to jobsitetheater.org and watch it, because when you talked about the love that and it's pretty early in the play where, you know, where their love is like, no, we love each other. Yeah. You know, hey Pops, I'm not really interested in that guy. I love this man and he loves her. And in that, like, just in that little video, there's two videos up there, you can see what you were talking about. Is you can see that there's this, like, they are in, like, can't take their eyes off each other. They want to be together. What is it? Now, when you were saying that the age, usually the character is portrayed older. I don't know how old you are, but usually I always sense that the character has lived quite a life at this time.
Yes.
So as not, and I'm not saying you didn't live quite a life yet, but did you have to worry or do anything with that, or just sort of be like, no, I need to have a big presence on stage and look like it's okay for me to be in charge, or how does that work?
For me, it was all about stature. Mm-hmm. Stature as physical, as okay. a physical being, mm-hmm. and also as a person of nobility. So I just knew that I had to rise to the occasion, mm-hmm. No matter what. You know, this. Once I sign the contract, I know I have to go ahead and do what needs to be done. And so I just had to pull in, you know, what would it feel like? Because I've never been put in a situation where I felt like I've wanted to kill someone. But what would drive me to that point? What would drive me to that point? And I thought more so along how strongly I feel about family. So, and I know how much I love my family. Family is a huge thing for me. So I just had to think about if one of my family members had wronged me to the worst thing that could possibly happen. And so just trying to take that on and use that as I am in love with this woman and the possibility for her to do the worst thing she could do to me just tears me apart.
It seems like being an actor, one of the, I am not an actor, I just want to make sure I'm really clear. Tried it, not good. But it seems that one of the benefits of being an actor is to be able to take on these parts of you or these actions, these thoughts, these feelings that you don't have to feel in your everyday life, but you get to explore them in a safer zone. I'm assuming that you're not going to end up really actually killing anyone. I hope you never do. I hope it never happens to you. You know, that same for you, even though on stage, I don't even know what your body count is, Giles. I mean, literally, there's probably thousands that you have killed in your life on the stage. And Tatiana, I hope you get a few under your belt as well. You know, so, but that to me is like, why isn't that part of being an actor is getting to do that?
I think, you know, with Desdemona and being murdered every night on stage, it's unfortunately the case that I have imagined that happening to me as a woman because gender violence is a huge issue in our country.
I've had a gun put into my mouth. Yep.
My mom is a survivor of domestic abuse, and I've grown up my whole life hearing those stories, and I've pictured myself being in those situations. So I was quite scared coming to this role because it felt very, very vulnerable to me to share that with an audience and with an ensemble of actors. And it doesn't get easier. I mean, every night it is a challenge every night. But it was really important to me to do this because of this experience and because I know so many women have experienced this behind closed doors and we don't see it. And it's important to give it a platform, I think. And it was important for me to show Desdemona as, you know, having legs underneath her. And she is this, she's young and naive, but she's, you know, she's strong and she's passionate and she's adventurous and she loves this man. And she's doing at the beginning of the play what she thinks is going to give her the most freedom and a fighting chance for love. And of course, we know it all goes wrong, but, you know,
but
I really wanted to show
good.
That. Yeah.
For a little while, it's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it is. The first half of the play.
So we're speaking with Job Site Theater cast from Othello, the leads. We've got Robert Richards Jr. Tatiana Beccario was just speaking and Giles Davies. So how, you know, what Tatiana just said about knowing every single night that she's going to get strangled and killed. How is a cast, and David's not here to talk about as a director, but how do you guys work through that as actors and in other plays that you've been? When there's something that's really difficult, how do you manage that?
Luckily, through the rehearsal process, we very quickly have to gravitate towards each other. So actors very quickly develop a strong sense of ensemble and group love because we've got to make ourselves vulnerable. So I've got to feel confident to do so with my fellow actor. So underneath the play and the drama is this great love and sense of camaraderie within the cast. So there's a huge amount of support. So, you know, as you recognized before, as an actor, we have a responsibility to show the full gamut of human possible emotion, action, reaction. And as long as I feel confident and comfortable to make myself vulnerable, to make myself ugly, that's my responsibility as an actor. And in order to do that, you've got to feel like you have the support of the group. I'm sure Tatiana would...
David and Giles, because Giles has been our fight director and has been instrumental in creating the fight sequences that we do on stage. And we, Robert and I, have worked very closely with Giles and very closely with David to craft the physicality on stage. We do a fight call every night Every day before a show, Giles watches us and we talk through it, talk about problem areas. I mean, we really have developed, I think, a safe space in which to make sure that our bodies are safe in these, you know, pretty extreme fight sequences that we're doing, but also that our psyche and our minds and, you know, that support is there.
Yeah. So that it stays healthy, because it is a very difficult thing to get murdered on stage numerous times, particularly when it is so vulnerable
and then murder himself.
Yeah. When we actually first began the strangle scene, like it wasn't until much later in the process, because I think David knew that this would be very, very, very emotional. And when we finally got to it and approached it, it was a little off-putting for Tati and I. And it was like, here it is. But, you know, like I said, we always have to rise to the occasion, and I felt under good hands of Giles and David. And watching us and making sure that things go correctly and that Tati trusts me and that if anything goes wrong, we have a signal to convey that, hey, too much is going on. We need to pull back. So,
that's great. Yeah. That's really great. Now, I was losing track of time. We're almost out of time. And I don't know if you have a brief, like, interchange or scene or something you can do between any of the characters so the listeners can sort of hear what the people sound like on stage. Does this need any type of setup?
Do you want to do that part of the handkerchief scene?
Which one?
I could start from "Why do you speak so startlingly and rash?"
Okay.
I'm going to start from there. Okay. "Why do you speak so startlingly and rash?
Is it lost? Is it gone? Speak, is it out of the way?
Bless us.
Say you?
It is not lost, but what in if it were?
How?
I say it is not lost.
Fetch, let me see it.
Why, so I can, but I will not now. This is a trick to put me from my suit. Pray you let Cassio be received again.
Fetch me the handkerchief. My mind misgives.
Come, you'll never meet a more sufficient man.
The handkerchief.
I pray talk me of Cassio.
The handkerchief.
A man that all this time hath founded his good fortunes on your love, shared dangers with you.
The handkerchief.
In sooth, you are to blame.
Zooms!
Yikes! I would not want to piss you off. So, Job Site Theater is doing Othello. Usually, Job Site does one of the plays that isn't quite so so dramatic. Or, I guess that's not the right, but there's comedies in the past and, you know, Tempest and stuff like that. And David Jenkins, the producing director, put on Job Site's website, I have it on our website, on our Facebook page, a reason why this play is important, and a lot of it has to do with the current political climate. And on the last segment, we were talking about the current political climate. For some listeners, they might be really excited with the way things are going right now. I think the majority of our listeners, and certainly I'm not super excited about the way things are going right now. Was any of that sort of filtered into what happens on stage right now? Is what is going on politically, societally, is that a word?
Yes.
Was that filtered in to what you guys are doing as personally living through here? Could you talk for a minute about that?
Absolutely. I mean, to me, you know, the way that I walked into this play, the things that I was thinking about when I walked into our first rehearsal was very much, you know, the political climate on my mind, thinking about the Obama years being over and having had this, you know, this black man in power who I think was an excellent president, and, you know, the extreme swings that we've now swung into with this, you know, number 45. And the dynamics, you know, there's nothing overtly political per se in this play, but I just think the dynamics of seeing a black man in power who is taken down by a white counterpart speaks volumes, personally.
Mm-hmm.
Add anything?
Yeah, I mean, you know, having a liar in power who would do anything for his own benefit is, you know.
Did you model anything on that?
Yeah, it's hard not to hit that nail, really.
Robert, you got anything? Or
I mean, just the racial issues. I mean, like, I love what David did with it. He dialed a lot of it back. Just so it's like it's not, you know, we're using it in today's terms. So a lot of racism isn't overtly in your face. And so I love how David made that an aspect within the show. So, yeah, those are things that are happening and those are things are said. And we know that. We don't need to beat a dead horse. So he took a lot of the, you know, some of the language away. So, I mean, like, he really just made me trust him with this process.
And that, I think, is a good point, is that our society or our American culture is a lot better at, you know, making the surfaces look nicer and fairer and everything else. And like, look, it looks pretty now. Look, we censored Steve King. We took him off a committee.
We had a black president.
It's like, yeah, well, the guy is still a Republican. You know, I mean, it's all still there. It's just like these little Band-Aids going on stuff. So I guess I should probably talk about your show for a minute. The Othello is running now through February 9th. And then you can go online to jobsitetheater.org. I don't have it right in front of me. Jobsite. Oh, wait. Do I? I might. Sometimes I do things correctly. Jobsitetheater.org. And you can always call the Straz to get tickets. Are there anything that I should let people know? Any events or anything going along with the play? Are there any talkbacks or anything? I know usually that happens the first week.
We don't have any talkbacks planned.
I would imagine you guys would be exhausted after the show.
I should mention that because Shakespeare Jobsite has been doing this annual Shakespeare gig. The number of high schools and students that we have coming in for the matinees is really amazing.
We've had a
decent amount of funding for that. So we're doing six shows a week.
Wow.
You know, we do student matinees on Thursday and Wednesday.
Sorry, we're out of time. Thank you so much. I want to make sure, because I'm so afraid of messing up your last name. Tatiana Vicari, Giles Davies, and Robert Richards Jr. for coming in. Thank you to our earlier guests. You are listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. This show is called Art in Your Ear. You can find all this information on the Art in Your Ear Facebook or, of course, on the Art in Your Ear page on WMNF.org. Coming up next is the NPR News. Hi, Chioki. And after the NPR News, you can hear the Live Music Showcase. Live Music Showcase today has Bill Wharton, the Sauce Boss, blues and slide guitar from North Florida. Stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.